Greetings to all of God's people. This is Mordecai Joseph. We are now today in lesson 123. That's 123. And we are in Genesis chapter 12, actually in Genesis chapter 13. And verse 12, we're talking about the separation between Lot and Abraham last time, in the last lesson. And in verse 12, we read about Lot going toward the direction of Sodom and Gomorrah. In verse 11, we read that, so Lot chose him all the plain of the Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, that is east of the land of Canaan, east of the Jordan River, and they separated themselves, the one from the other. And the separation there, we can imagine, you know, the scene that obviously emotions are involved, but that was for the best, since they could not live in peace together. We're not speaking about Lot and Abraham himself, but the shepherds, and therefore that creates other problems, bad emotions and all things like that, so it was best for them to separate. And so Lot went toward the direction of the cities and an area that was very fertile, that was very beautiful, that was very well watered. It had plenty of water from the Jordan. And so in verse 12 we read, Abram dwelt in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelt in the cities of the plain. And actually, the way you read it in Hebrew, he lived in the circle of the cities. In other words, that whole area was sort of a round area. And so the word that is used in Hebrew was in the circle of the cities. And it's not necessarily the plain. And that's basically what they call that area, kikar. Kikar means a circle. From that comes the word for bread, because the bread was generally made round. So they use the same thing. And also it is used for the circle, or you know, the center of town, you know, the circle of town. And so he went in those areas, and those cities were spread around that fertile area, and they looked like a circle. And so first he dwelt in the cities that were around, and then gradually he inched his way over the city of Sodom, and eventually ended up in the city itself. And so that created many, many problems for him in the future, which basically entailed the total loss of his family, with the exception of his two daughters. And so in verse 13, we read, now the men of Sodom were wicked and sinners against the Lord exceedingly. And generally the concept that we have about Sodom and Gomorrah to this very day, that the concept of the city that is beyond just the name was used for different sins. And you know, you have in English terminology to sodomize, means to do like the sodomites, and basically it is involved in the sense of man and men, and the manner in which they engage in sexual intercourse. And so everybody, whenever they think about Sodom and Gomorrah, they generally think about the sexual sins of Sodom and Gomorrah. But it's interesting to see it from God's point of view, because that's not the way generally God viewed the sins of Sodom and Gomorrah. For that, let's have a little inkling here. I mean, oftentimes when we read many things in the Bible, and people along the time, you know, as time goes by, different preachers put a certain emphasis on it, and it becomes the norm, then everybody thinks about it from that point of view, and then it goes on and on and on, and other people come and preach more about it, and pretty soon you have a certain attitude towards certain things. And yet when you look at it from God's point of view, as Christ would say, you know, look at it from the beginning. How was it in the beginning? How does God view these matters? You find that it is either a little bit different, sometimes entirely different. So I think it is important for us at this point to take a little diversion here and see how God looks at the people of Sodom and Gomorrah. How did He look at them? And how did He think about them even many, many centuries down the road? Now we're going to jump all the way to the days of Ezekiel, which is basically about, 1,000 years later. How did God view the problems of Sodom and Gomorrah, in contrast to how human people, and the preachers, and all of us, if we're not careful, you know, if we just listen to men and follow their thinking, the ideas that we develop. Now, in the days of Ezekiel, that was about 500, the 6th century B.C., so you have the children of Israel already there about 6 centuries from the days of David. And then you go forward about 400 years to the days of 480 years from the time that they came out of Egypt, and then another 400 years to the days of Abraham. You're talking roughly about 12, 13 centuries. So how did God look upon Sodom and Gomorrah about 13 centuries down the road? Again, in contrast to the way we've been taught and the way we think about Sodom and Gomorrah. And I guess today we may think about San Francisco in that way. How would God regard the sins and iniquities of those people? In the book of Ezekiel, in chapter 16, God is addressing the sins of Jerusalem. And He's speaking about Samaria and also about Jerusalem. First, He's addressing Jerusalem as a whole, a symbol of the entirety of the nation. And then He's dividing it between the two factions of Jerusalem, that is, of the people of Israel, that became the cities of Judah, that is, the cities that were centered with their, you know, in their government, that is, their king and kingdom and temple and center of religion and everything else, in Jerusalem, and then the one in the north, nearby, Samaria. And so he's discussing the sins of these two factions of the hands of Israel that were divided. And he's discussing their sins and the way he regarded their nature and their history and their transgressions against him. And also he's contrasting it with the nations around them. And so we read in chapter 16 of Ezekiel in verse 46, he's specifically now speaking about the children of Judah. He says to Judah, "Your elder sister is Samaria, who dwells with her daughters to the north of you." That is, her daughters, Samaria and her daughters, means all the other tribes of Israel that were with them, the 10 tribes. And Samaria was the center where the king was, and he was generally from Ephraim. And so he says, "Your elder sister is Samaria, who dwells with her daughters to the north of you, and your younger sister who dwells to the south of you is Sodom and her daughters. And you did not walk in their ways nor act according to their abominations. But if that were too little, you became more corrupt than they in all your ways." And so he's speaking about both Samaria and Jerusalem, symbol of the nation of the house of Judah, and also about Sodom and Gomorrah, or in particular Sodom. And so he says, "You did not walk in their ways nor act according to their abominations," that is Sodom on one hand and Samaria on the other, "but as if that were too little for you, you became more corrupt than they in all your ways." And that's how God viewed the sins and iniquities of Jerusalem at the time of the captivity. That in comparing them to the northern kingdom that was taken to captivity a century earlier, and in comparing them to Sodom, that was basically obliterated from the face of the earth 13 centuries later, he says to Judah, and that's not complimentary, and of course a lot of people don't like to hear it, especially if you come from the house of Judah. And I happen to be also from the house of Judah. And if you think about it carnally, you don't like that. But when you realize the way God views things and the way things were, you have to accept it the way it is. It doesn't mean that you are that way. All it means is that that's the history of your nation. And God doesn't have many good things to say about either Israel or Judah. But the way he viewed it, the corruption of Judah was even worse. And the reason is the nature of the people of Judah is that what they do all the way. They're extremely passionate people. They don't have inhibitions, like you find more in the northern kingdom, and especially as time went by, they became much more inhibited in many things that they do. But the people of Judah have the qualities of a lion. A lion is not fearful. A lion, when he goes after the prey, he goes all the way. And even at the beginning of this faction of the people of Judah, because remember there were two brothers that were born to Judah from Tamar, his daughter-in-law, and one was Zerah and the other one was Perez. Now what does Perez mean? Perez means one that breaks all the breaches, that bursts forth. And that's how the nurse or the handmaid that was delivering the child, she viewed it that way. Because remember the story where Zerah put his hand out at the time of the birth, and then he pulled it back, sort of inhibited a little bit, and went back in. And then his brother just shoved out his way and came out. And you see this qualities in Judah. Now, if they use it for good, it's great. It's wonderful. And that's why you see the great accomplishments among the Jewish people. But when they use it, unfortunately, for bad, for evil, in the areas of transgressions, when they depart from the law of God, well, it's bad all the way. And that's the way God regards it, and that's reality. And those of us who are converted, even though we may be Jews, we realize that and we understand it, that when we give our heart and our mind to God, we can achieve high and lofty goals, and we go all the way in that direction. Like David. See the Lion of David. He was a lion, but David also, on the other hand, you know, when he gave himself to wickedness, which he did in the sin of Bathsheba and the murder of her husband, well, he went all the way into evil also, and God let him know what he thought about it. But then on the other hand, you know, David generally repented, and with the exception of this too, God generally had nothing but good to say about him. And so it is for Judah. When they give themselves to God, when they obey the laws of God, they go all the way toward righteousness and they achieve very high goals, and not only in this direction, but in every field of endeavor. And so God views it that way, and we should see it that way. And of course, on the other hand, we should not develop any attitudes, which are corrupt attitudes of comparing ourselves with ourselves and putting down the others. You know, you're worse than we are, and I'm holier than thou. So you've got to be careful on both ends. Anyway, this is the way God views it. And so he says in verse 48, "As I live, says the Eternal God, neither your sister Sodom nor her daughters," that is the city of Sodom, that was the chief city, "and all the other daughters, Gomorrah and so on, and all the others, you know, all the other cities that were around, that all of them were zapped. Basically, all of them were destroyed, wiped out from the face of the earth. There were five cities there. And so you see, that is five main cities. Sodom was one of them, the chief one. So he says, "As I live, says the Eternal God, neither your sister Sodom nor her daughters have done as you and your daughters have done." And you read Jeremiah, and you read the Kings also, and you read Isaiah, and you find out, and you read Ezekiel, how bad Judah has degenerated, how down the drain it went, that God finally had to spew them out. Of course, he did, you know, formerly the northern kingdom. But with Judah, his wrath and fury was much greater, and you can see the punishment that came upon them. Lamentation describes that very, very graphically. It was much worse than the punishment that came upon the house of Israel, who were taken to captivity, and basically many of them were taken and were resettled in those lands. Well, you don't see the same thing happen with Judah. They were butchered, you know, they were destroyed, and few of them that were righteous were taken earlier into captivity to Nebuchadnezzar to Babylon, and that's the captivity of Ezekiel and Daniel and his friends. But as for the remnant, God brought horrible destruction on them, and Jeremiah describes that, and only very few of them were left, and even them, you know, they went to Egypt and God destroyed them there because they would continue to be rebellious. And so God viewed their sins from that point of view. And we're not talking just about sexual sins. They had that problem. Israel had that problem too, and they still do to this very day. That's what San Francisco and LA and many other places are all about, in England and other places where children of Israel are. And that problem is everywhere. But the way God views it, it's a nature, the nature that is given to wickedness and to sin on one hand, you know, or on the other hand, to righteousness. And so here, that's what he says. As I live, says the Eternal, that is Jehovah, your Elohim, neither your sister Sodom nor her daughters have done as you and your daughters have done. Look, this was the iniquity of your sister Sodom. Now, all of us, when we think about Sodom and Gomorrah, we generally think about the sexual sins. And we, in essence, blow it totally out of proportion that we'd blind ourselves to even look at what the Scriptures are telling us, how God viewed it. What was the real problem of Sodom? What is the real problem of San Francisco? What is the real problem of a large area in Southern California who are given to this way of life, and for that matter, you know, any other parts of the world who are given to this area? What's the problem? What leads them in that direction? Now, this is what God says. Look, this was the iniquity of your sister Sodom. So this is the emphasis that he puts on it. She and her daughter had pride. You see? Pride. That was the problem of Satan. Lucifer that became Satan. Pride. He was lofty in his own sight. He was haughty. He was arrogant. He exalted himself. I. And then you see Nebuchadnezzar, you know, following that footstep, and God made an animal out of him. As you can read in Daniel. Pride, fullness of food, and abundance of idleness. Now, what do people do when they have a lot of pride and full of food and abundance of idleness? Well, they're given to wickedness and to evil, and they degenerate from one pleasure to another, you know, like the debauchery and the corruption that was in Rome and Greece before that. That's what happens. In days of poverty, people don't do those things. They're too busy making a living. And because of that, they tend to be more family-oriented and more humble and more righteous in many ways. And the nations of Israel today, and have been for quite a while, are the top of the world. And so, they are the most proud nations on the face of the earth. They have fullness of food and their abundance of idleness. That's why you see the nature of the nation, the moral fabric of the nation, and also the leadership is so low that other nations can't even believe, you know, how low these Westerners are sinking. That's why many nations, you know, they despise American culture, because they see all the corruption and the vomit that comes out of it. And here we call it entertainment, and music, and movies, and so forth, and everything else. And so this is what he's saying about Sodom and Gomorrah. It was an area that was, you might compare it to today, wonderful economy. They had fertile area, glorious place, plenty of water. They had no worries. Everybody was making lots of money. You know, in today's terms, you might say that, you know, their Wall Street was doing great. The Nasdaq was doing great. Stocks and high tech and all those things at the time. And they had a lot of money. And they were doing great. But in the midst of that, you see the decadence and the corruption and the moral fabric that is, you know, torn in pieces in all directions. And so that's how God viewed the problem. And that's how we should view Sodom and Gomorrah. Not, you know, just in the narrow-minded concept that many have had all this time. And he says, she and her daughter had pride. That is, she and her daughters, that is, in all the cities around, obviously all of them were rich. They all followed in the same footsteps. They had pride, fullness of food, and abundance of idleness. And, on the other hand, neither did she strengthen the hand of the poor and needy. And you see the same thing in the rich nations of the day. On one hand, so much riches. On the other hand, so much poverty. And the rich don't care about the poor. They're too busy, you know, not just making money, but too busy having fun. And fun could be anything else, either good or bad. In verse 50, and they were haughty. You see, they're proud, so they're haughty, obviously. And they're thinking, you know, look at us. Look at what we achieve. We're at the top of the world. Who cares about others? See, there is no humility there, no meekness. And they were haughty and committed abomination before me. Therefore, I took them away as I saw fit. Or in other words, I totally blotted them out from under heaven. You know, they're all dust and ashes. And then he says in verse 51, Samaria did not commit half of your sins. And he's speaking about the nation of Judah, about Jerusalem. But you have multiplied your abominations more than they, and have justified your sisters, that is the northern kingdom, your own brothers, children of Israel, 10 tribes, and Sodom and her sisters around, you know, the other cities around. You have justified your sisters by all the abominations which you have done. Especially if you remember in the days of the son of a very, very, very righteous king, Hezekiah. Of all things, he ends up with a son which was the worst king Judah ever had, and that was Manasseh. And he filled Judah for over 50 years that he reigned with bloodshed, with iniquities, for which cause God said to Jeremiah, because of all the sins of Manasseh, I will not forgive Judah, but I'm going to bring utter destruction on them. And so this king Manasseh, who was the son of a very righteous king, and you wonder, you know, how do those kind of things happen from one extreme to the other? But then you see examples now and then. One man is righteous and his sons are totally the opposite direction because they give their minds to another spirit. And so he corrupted the whole nation. And the whole nation followed in his footsteps. And they filled Jerusalem with iniquity, social iniquities, religious iniquities, bloodshed, you know, sacrificing their children to foreign gods and passing them through the fire and so forth and so forth. So Judah degenerated because it had several extremely degenerate kings, and the whole nation went by the wayside. Now you see examples of that today in our own time, different nations, not only in the United States, but other places. The leaders are very corrupt. They're not what they used to be, so to speak. Not that they were perfect in the past, they had a lot of their own problems, but in comparison to those leaders that we had in the past, today they are so corrupt. The moral threshold is so low that some people may seem to be good by comparison. But when you realize how far they departed from the way it used to be 50 years ago, you would realize how far down the drain we've come. And so this is what happened to Judah, unfortunately. And so he says, you have justified your sisters, in verse 51, by all the abominations which you have done, verse 52, you who judged your sisters, bear your own shame also. You see, Judah was judging her sisters. Well, you know, as for you, the children of Israel, they would say, you know, you went into idolatry. We did not. And as for Sodom and Gomorrah, well, that's not even something to be mentioned, because obviously they thought that they were more holier than they. And so that's what he says. You judge your sisters. Bear your own shame also, and especially you can imagine the arrogance that was there also and the haughtiness when the northern kingdom was taken to captivity and Judah remained behind. Of course, many Jews also were taken to captivity at the time. But generally speaking, you know, the nation remained behind, the king was left there, and they went on. So they thought that they were more righteous than the others, and they judged the others as being more wicked, and they didn't see it from God's point of view. And they didn't realize that it was just a matter of time before God deals with them too. And so he said, you judge your sisters, bear your own shame also, because the sins which you have committed were more abominable than theirs. They are more righteous than you. That's how God viewed it. You know, you saw that you were holier than they, and actually they were holier than thou. Imagine that. Imagine that, to say that about the people of Sodom and Gomorrah, that they were more righteous than the people of Judah. Now, that's not anything personal. I myself am Jewish from an Orthodox family. But if you are to think like God, you have to think like God, no matter how much bad it may be for your own nation as a whole. After all, the prophets, like Daniel and others, you know, where they were confessing the sins, their own sins and the sins of their fathers, they always mentioned that, you know, all the horrible things that we and our fathers have done in your sight, and you brought all this evil and punishment upon us. You see, if we serve God, we have to have open eyes and be willing to fully accept and take that responsibility. Not that we ourselves are doing it, you know. We better not. We should be serving God and departing from that and learning from those lessons. But on the other hand, you know, none of us should ever develop a haughty and arrogant attitude. You know, you Jews, you are evil, or you Israelites, you are evil, as the Jews said about Israelites, or you Sodomites, you know, people of Gomorrah, you're horrible and evil. That's what they've been doing in this land, you know, all the preachers. Speaking so much evil about the people in Sodom and Gomorrah, when probably in the sight of God, many of them were much worse. And supposedly they were people of the cloth, or people of religion, and things like that. Like Puritans and Victorians, who have done much more horrible things in the sight of God, and they're not going to be willing to accept it. Yet God is going to bring all of us to justice and to judgment, and none of us is going to be able at that point to point the finger at anybody else. And we should always walk humbly before God and realize the truth the way it is and depart from it. Learn from the mistakes of others. And so it says, in comparison to you, they are more righteous than you. Yes, be disgraced also and bear your own shame, because you justified your sisters. Now, is that the end of the story? You see, the bigoted and the hypocrites in the world of, let's say, Christianity, all this time, you know, the red seers kind of things like that, you say, well, we told you those Jews are so horrible, so evil, or they would say it about, you know, the children of Israel, and that's the end of the story, and you're all going to hell. And, you know, you all go to hell, just like the people of Sodom and Gomorrah are all in hell, you know, screaming and yelling and kicking and all that. Well, God looks at that attitude and says, you know, you're no different than Sodom and Gomorrah in your thinking. And that's exactly what he thinks about all the supposed Christians, the majority, overwhelming majority of them were in that state of mind. They were extremely corrupt and polluted and defiled and went down the drain, or, I mean, so down, so low, that probably were much worse than the people of Sodom and Gomorrah in the sight of God. And when the time comes for judgment, they are going to have their eyes open. They will see themselves as they are. And as God said about the children of Israel, He said, when I bring you back from captivity, I'm going to open your eyes and you're going to see yourself for what you really are. And He said, and you are going to loathe yourself for all of your abominations. So none of us should ever accuse anybody else or put, you know, I mean, point the finger at anybody else. We should always look at ourselves, see where we stand before God and view things like that. And so, in verse 53, God says something that obviously is totally contrary to Protestant theology, Catholic theology, you know, Jewish theology, and the theology of all the, you know, all those uninformed and ignoramuses and hypocrites and bigoted people who don't know and don't understand and don't see things from God's point of view and the way things are going to be in the future. You know, they believe in the heaven and hell, and people of Sodom and Gomorrah were so horrible, they're all in hell, burning. A lot of people were saying that all this time for centuries, and many still do to this very day about the Jews, or about anybody who is not so-called Christian, or anybody who have never heard about the name of Christ and called upon the name of Christ. Everybody's in hell, even babies. You see the hypocrisy there that is on the part of many, and they call themselves Christians, followers of Christ. So verse 53, God illuminates us. We have eyes to see. He says, when I bring back their captives, the captives of Sodom and her daughters. What do you mean the captives of Sodom? You know, they're all blotted out and supposed to be in hell. You see, there is no doctrine of hell. That's one of the biggest lies, one of the most abominable lies of so-called Christianity. All the horrible pain and suffering and anguish that they brought on many and still do to this very day. And many do their work, they base their whole work, supposed work of preaching the gospel to everyone, on this false doctrine of hell, scaring people to death. And it's not real repentance there. He says, no, I'm going to bring them back from captivity. What's the captivity of the grave? The grave is called the place of captivity. Also, not just being in the land of the enemies. He says, when I bring them back, the captives of Sodom and her daughters, and the captives of Samaria and her daughters, all those who died, then I will also bring back the captives of your captivity among them. Speaking about all those people of Judah that he sent into captivity, not only the captivity of the sword, but the captivity of the grave. So I'm going to bring you all back. It's not the end of the story. That you may bear, in verse 54, your own shame and be disgraced by all that you did when you comforted them. You know, there were the words, you know, you exalted yourself when you put them to shame. You judged them. You pointed the finger at them. And so in verse 55, when your sister Sodom and her daughters returned to their former state. You see? Now if you're in hell, you don't return. You see the abomination that was there? You know, and these people had the audacity and the, you know, they were so bigoted and hypocrites and blind and ignorant and so morally corrupt. And then many of them will think of themselves righteous to this very day and teach this kind of abomination and believe it. And do not know their God and His love and mercy and compassion and His forgiveness and the reason for which He gave His life and the reason for which, as it says, for God so loved the world, not hated them. He didn't hate Sodom and Gomorrah. He hated their actions. And He gave His Son so they would not perish. Even though they're in the grave, He doesn't want them to perish eternally. He's going to bring them back. So you see the same vomit and the same wickedness and filthiness that was in Judah that is also in all those who call themselves Christians, you know, good Christians, good moral Christians. You see? You have to look at it from God's point of view. That's the reason why we study the Word of God. So we can see ourselves in the mirror and cleanse ourselves, as James, you know, James would say, you know, cleanse yourself, you double-minded people. You know, we have to cleanse and purge and purify ourselves and stop looking at others and their sins and iniquities, you know, as if we're better than they are, we're holier than they are, and they're worse than we are, and they all deserve to go to hell. Or they, you know, or they are there. So God is speaking to all of us in these words. And so it says, when I bring back, when your sister Sodom and her daughters return to their former state, and Samaria and her daughters return to their former state, then you and your daughters will return to your former state. Okay, God is going to bring back all, wash them, cleanse them, purge them, purify them, atone for their sins. You see? Sodom and Gomorrah and children of Israel, we're speaking about those generations that God sent into captivity, and all those who came after them and all those who came before them. And so, verse 56, for your sister Sodom was not a byword in your mouth in the days of your pride. You see? And to this very day, people that don't like other people say, well, you're people of Sodom and Gomorrah. They put them down and they don't see the vomit of their own self-righteousness and the pride that is in them and the sense that is in them and the way God views it. We must all come in the spirit of meekness and humility before God at all times and live that kind of life. And not be so arrogant and haughty, you know, no matter how righteous we may think that we are, and put down others. That's not love, that's hatred. And hatred makes you a murderer. And a murderer cannot stand before God, you know, and claim, I'm righteous and I'm good and I'm holy. See, we're all filthy. That's what the prophets told us. All of our righteousness, that's the way God put it, all of our righteousness are His filthy garments before Him. And that's how Isaiah even spoke about his own self. You know, all my righteousness, all the righteousness of man are His filthy garments before you. So we should never, ever think about anybody, you know, maybe it's San Francisco or speaking about the people who do not know their right from their left or any other part of the world. Well, yes, you know, those things are horrible and abominable and filthy and all that, but we should always remember, as sexual sins are regarded that way by certain people, so is the sin of pride and lack of care for the poor. It's all in the same boat. And that's a problem with many of us. We don't really understand what righteousness is from God's point of view. And so we categorize them. Well, God is categorizing the sins of Sodom and Gomorrah and Israel and Judah and all that. And He doesn't put sexual sin as the number one. He puts pride. Now, nobody goes to jail for pride. People are exalted, you know, and are exalting themselves in their nation. Says, oh, we are a proud nation. We are this and that. Well, God says, you're fully, you know, full of what? abominations and filthiness and so forth, and you can use whatever word you want to use there. Well, that's the way God views us, full of vomit. And so we should learn lessons from these. And verse 57, again, before your wickedness was uncovered, it was like the time of the reproach of the daughters of Syria. Or, in other words, God speaks about other nations and their problems and His own people. He says, you're not better than they are. And so, and Syria, you know, committed a lot of atrocities, and many other nations likewise, and God condemned all of them, and He was very angry with all of them, but He was angry with His own people. He's not a respecter of persons, and we should not either. And at the same time, we should not be haughty and proud and arrogant and have this attitude, you know, we're better than you are. There are churches today, there are groups today, there are leaders today that say, you know, we're better than the other groups. You know, we're a livelier one, we're better, you know, we're more righteous, we're Philadelphia and you're not, and so forth and so forth. God looks at them and says, you're worse than Sodom and Gomorrah. That's your attitude, pride. You see? You know, we're doing great work, so we are, you know, we have fullness of food and abundance and all these things. And we do not strengthen the others, but we put them down. Instead of helping others, we put them down and exalt ourselves. That's the way God views the sins of Judah and Jerusalem. A lot of pride, a lot of fullness of food, a lot of abundance, you know. Look at us, you know, we accomplish a lot. We achieve a lot. And the nation of Judah today, you know, they're proud of their achievements. That's pride. And this land, in all the lands of Israel, America, and, you know, Canada, and New Zealand, England, Europe, and all that. Everybody's proud of their achievements and all that. They don't care about the poor. God says those kind of sins are worse than the sins of Sodom and Gomorrah. So we have to look at it from God's point of view, not our point of view. Not the point of view of the ignorant preachers of the land. But they decide in their own mind what sin is worse than the other. Yeah, James said, you broke one, you broke them all. So where do we stand? We're in the same category of Sodom and Gomorrah and the people of Judah here, as God speaks about them, the people of Israel that went into captivity, and the people of Syria, and so forth and so forth. And so God says, before your wickedness, verse 57, was uncovered, it was like the time of the reproach of the daughters of Syria and all those around here, and of the daughters of the Philistines, who despise you everywhere. Despise you because, morally speaking, in many other ways, they're not as bad as you are. In verse 58, ye have paid for your lewdness and your abomination, says the Eternal. And the lewdness, oftentimes, that God spoke about was a spiritual lewdness. Because there was a marriage there. And verse 59, for thus says the Eternal, or thus says Jehovah Elohim, Lord God in English, I will deal with you as you have done, who despise the oath by breaking the covenant, the marriage covenant. He said, you despise it. That's why you had, as he said, on every hill you had an altar and you sacrificed to idols. And you pass your children through the fire. And you have sexual orgies there, just like you learned from the nations all around you. And you didn't care about, you know, about the poor and the needy and all that. And you did much worse than others. Another, you know, even your brethren, children of Israel, and Sodom and Gomorrah and all the other nations. Verse 60, nevertheless, see, always look at that word because of what God is. As He said many times, look, I don't do it for you, I do it for my own sake. So there's always nevertheless, no matter how down the drain we go. Some people say I'm so scum, or horrible and abominable and all that, God cannot forgive me. Or we look at others and say they are so bad, they are so evil, they are so horrible. There's no hope for them. All deserve to go to hell. And so we develop this hatred and contempt in our hearts and our minds toward others. God says, nevertheless, I will remember my covenant with you in the days of your youth. See, during our honeymoon when things were still better. And I will establish an everlasting covenant with you. Now all the so-called righteous preachers of Christianity for the past 2,000 years, I never thought about this statement. For them, all the Jews are horrible and evil. They all go to hell. They're all children of the devil and all that. And they supposedly were righteous. They believed in Christ. They believed in the Lord. And they still do to this very day. And there are people in all that state of mind. What do you think entered into the heart and the mind of the Nazi mind? Of those in Germany that committed those horrible atrocities, not only against Judah, but against others. You know, this attitude, we are better than you are, you're, you know, less than nothing, you're less than the dust of the earth, you know, you're vermin, so whatever it may be, and that attitude had, toward the Jews, was toward others. See what happens to us? God says, you begin to think like that, you're no different than a Nazi, you're no different than a Sodomite, you're no different than all those horrible and abominable people. You know, this is Passover time, it's a good time to reflect on these things, at least, you know, the time when this is this step is made. Maybe by the time you hear it, it'll be many months later on, or a year, or whatever years. But in either case, any given time, we should be reflecting on these things and come before God in humility and meekness. And so says, nevertheless, I will remember my covenant with you in the days of your youth, and I will establish an everlasting covenant with you. Then you will remember your ways and be ashamed when you receive your older and your younger sisters, for I will give them to you for your daughters, or that is for daughters, but not because of my covenant with you. You see, it's because of His mercy. And then all of them are going to acknowledge their sins and iniquities. God is going to wash them, purge them, purify them, and they shall all be righteous. And so we should look at all human beings, not as they are, but as God looks at them, as they will be. That's the reason for His sacrifice. So people talk a lot about the sacrifice of Jesus Christ on one hand and appreciating the sacrifice of Christ, and they preach so much about it, especially around the Passover season and the rest of the year, and then they go and do horrible, commit horrible atrocities against others, as they've done against the people of Judah for 2,000 years, as they've done against other nations, as they've done, you know, in the Crusaders, you know, against the Muslims and other nations, even in their own people, in many places, you see. But we have to look at it from God's point of view. Verse 62, and I will establish my covenant with you, then you shall know that I am Jehovah. As, you know, we went through it in the previous couple of lessons. Those people don't know God. That's why they do what they do. And so hopefully, we know God. Because if we don't know God, then obviously that's the reason why we do what we do and have the attitudes that we have. And some people, you know, put down, and husbands put down their wives. You're not as righteous as I am. Leaders are putting down the congregation, the members, you know, your lay members, we are the exalted elite. And brethren put down other brethren, and churches or groups put down other groups. You see where we all are? We do not know the Lord if we are that way. And that was the problem of Judah and Jerusalem and Sodom and Gomorrah and so forth and so forth. They did not know God. They did not know Jehovah. Verse 63, so he says, I will establish my covenant with you in verse 62, then you shall know that I am Jehovah, verse 63, that you may remember and be ashamed, and all of us should be, and never open your mouth anymore because of your shame, when I provide you an atonement for all you have done, says Jehovah Elohim. That's the core of the meaning of what it means to say, thy kingdom come, so all of us can be atoned for. Our sins and iniquities. You see? All of us. Not just they. All of us. And be purged and cleansed and purified and returned to God and not be any more like other nations that were evil or our own forefathers and so forth and so forth. And so when we read in Genesis chapter 13 that the people of Sodom and Gomorrah were worse than anybody else, in verse 13, we should remember these words. Where do we stand? How much do we know God? And so when Lot separated from Abram and went toward that unfortunate place, and he had to learn a hard lesson, and all of us are going to learn hard lessons if we head in that direction. In verse 14 we read, and the Lord said unto Abram, after that Lot was separated from him, lift up now your eyes and look from the place where you are, northward and southward and eastward and westward, for all the land that you see, to you I will give it. You see, Lot got now what seemed to be a very good area, but that area later on was going to be cursed and burned and pulverized, so to speak. You're going to be left with the land of Canaan. And to your seed, I'm going to give it forever. Forever. You see, in spite of all these evils that we just read about the people of Judah and Israel in the past and other nations around, I'm going to give it to you forever. So the ever, forever is not over yet. Some people forgot that and they can send everybody to hell they didn't like. Verse 16, and I will make your seed as the dust of the earth, so that if a man can remember or can number the dust of the earth, then all your seed also shall be numbered. We should think about it always from God's point of view. The whole entirety of the whole picture. From the beginning of the plan of salvation, from the days of Adam and Eve that were created until the end. And people don't think that way, unfortunately. So we've got all these problems. And he says, verse 17, okay, I'm going to give it to you now. I want to take a walk. He says, arise, walk through the land, in the length of it, and in the breadth of it, for unto you I will give it, just like he said to Moses, and with your eyes, look at the land of Canaan. Of course, he didn't allow him to go in because of his own iniquity in the wilderness. But to Abraham, he says, take a walk, see it, literally. I'm not going to give it to you. At this moment, you're going to live and then die. But ultimately, you too will inherit it when you are resurrected. And so Abraham moved his tent and came and dwelt by the terebinth of Mamre, which are in Hebron, and built there an altar unto Jehovah. And so he worshipped God again, the one that makes all the promises and the ones that will deliver him and all of his seeds and all those that will come later on, you know, from him and all the families of the earth from all their sins, and he will atone for all their iniquities. And so Abraham, the father of the faithful, knew the entirety of the picture. That's why he looked forward on all those that came after him to the city whose builder and maker is God and not man. Well, anyway, we're going to stop at this point. This is again Mordecai Joseph saying greetings to all of God's people. Until next time.